integrated version of the first law. But you see that this VP term also enters this MA relation. And of course, if I don't include the VP term, if I don't include the first the term in the first law, then I will not have this term here, and then I cannot get an equality. So simply including VDP term is to have the other relation as well. However, I will not use this for anything in my talk today. So nevertheless, so this is a beautiful first law and beautiful smart relation, and it works very well for black holes, for any black hole you can imagine. So you can consider black holes with various asymptotic properties, with various horizon topologies. You can add as many charges as you want. You can add as many rotation parameters as you want. But there's one remarkable exception, and that is of the accelerated black hole described by the symmetry. So until very recently, people were not able to write this first law or the Smart relation, or simply to understand thermodynamics of black holes that accelerate. And so this is the central topic of today's talk. I will try to tell you the story how to construct the thermodynamics for these strange objects, and tell you what are the obstacles and why you may be skeptical about that this is even possible. So here's the plan of the talk. I will first introduce what I mean by accelerated black holes, and I will spend pretty much long time about this because I want the setup to be completely clear. And then I will start discussing the thermodynamics of these objects. In particular, I will need two intermezzos. So the first intermezzo will discuss how to actually calculate the mass in asymptotically ADS spacetimes. And we shall see that there's many possibilities, and it's very hard to choose which one is the best one. So that will be the first intermezzo. And then there will be another one which will actually discuss what these conjugate quantities are. So typically, these guys here, which you differentiate, are the asymptotic charges, so the angular momentum and the charge and whatever. But then you have the thermodynamically conjugate quantities, like the angular velocity and the electrostatic potential and so on. And so in order to formulate this law for accelerated black holes, we really need to understand what these conjugate quantities are. And that will be the topic of the second intermezzo. Okay, and then I'll discuss also black holes' rotation and charge, and I mentioned some future directions. All right, so now I've been actually interested in this topic for a couple of years now, and we have published lots of papers about it. The first two papers are mostly wrong, so that's a moral of the story. Never trust a physical review letters paper. So that one is actually the worst of them all. The second one is slightly better. And then we published more recently, so you see this is already 2016, but now this is a paper which appeared like 2 weeks ago, whatever. So now we sort of think that in these two papers we fixed the errors in the previous two papers, but of course there are still what if, and maybe this is actually not the whole story. So just keep that in mind when I refer to paper one and paper two. It has some conceptually good ideas, but actually the calculation is completely wrong. And the results are wrong and whatever. But
can you tell us what's wrong?
I'll tell you. Yeah. If I don't, please press on. Okay. So what are the accelerated black holes? Well, everybody can imagine an accelerated rocket, and so accelerated black hole is simply just replacing the front of the rocket by the black hole. Okay. No, seriously. So accelerated black holes are described by a metric which is called the C-metric. And the C-metric is an exact stationary axisymmetric solution which contains black holes. It's a solution of Einstein equations in vacuum, or you can add cosmological constant, or you can add electromagnetic fields, you can add scalar fields, you can add many things. So interestingly, this solution is almost as old as general relativity itself. It was first found by Weyl in 1917. And then independently by Levi-Civita in 1918, and then after that many times forgotten and rediscovered again. So Ehlers and Kundt thought that they are the first ones to find this metric. And then it was sort of finally understood what this metric might mean by Kinnersley and Walker in 1970s. But then since then there's lots of work actually done on the C-metric. So what it is, so the most typical configuration is as displayed in this figure. It basically describes a pair of accelerated black holes. So you have one black hole, so you have two black holes. They come from infinity. They uniformly decelerate. They come to some finite distance from each other, and then they accelerate back to infinity. Okay, so that's the basic setup. So you see there's one black hole going like this, and it's a black hole horizon here, and there's another black hole going like that, there's a black hole horizon here. And of course, as typical for Rindler frame, you have an accelerated horizon in between the two things. It sort of separates, and so these black holes cannot never be in communication because of this Rindler horizon in between them. Okay, so now what causes the acceleration? So the original formulation is that people say, well, there's actually a conical deficit in between the two black holes. So the solution is not regular everywhere, but on the axis in between the two black holes, you sort of don't have periodicity of 2 pi, but you have slightly smaller periodicity or bigger periodicity. And so this can be interpreted as having some energy momentum. You can smooth out this conical deficit by putting some energy momentum, and that would correspond to a strut. So you have something which sort of pushes the black holes away from each other. So as they come closer to each other, there's something which sort of pushes away this black hole and pushes away that black hole, and this is this strut here.
So you have some stress and energy tensor associated with this.
The simple situation is that you just have vacuum, but then you have to live with the conical access or conical deficit. Of course, if you don't like having conical access or conical deficit, you can replace it with real cosmic string or with cosmic strut by smoothing out the conical deficit. So now I can provide some energy momentum tensor, which will be that, for example, of abelian Higgs model. And then I can smooth out this conical deficit. And then outside of the string, it will sort of still be a vacuum solution. But of course, this is replaced by a non-trivial energy momentum tensor.
I mean, this has been the traditional story, but can you actually justify this in terms of the...
Yes.
I mean, this has always been the hope, because, I mean, you know, if I try to push something into a black hole, of course it doesn't push the black hole in. It falls in and breaks off, or if I try to pull a rope on it, then I have the same problem.
Well, this has been found as a perturbative solution, so I don't know if you can, you know... So what people did is that really they constructed whatever the solution is for the string in between, and then they backreacted. They found the first backreaction on the spacetime. So it seems that, like, in the perturbative sense, this is all well-defined, and there's no problem. But of course, I don't know if there's a problem in the full nonlinear story or whatever. Anyways,
you only need a finite amount of energy to...
Oh, OK, very good. So this strut in between the two is sort of finite, but as the black holes go further and further away, it's becoming bigger and bigger. I agree with that. So now what I will do is actually something even worse, is that I will replace this strut with a cosmic string which goes from the black hole to infinity. So I'll have semi-infinite string. You have to have that, yeah. So it is a strange solution. So now you may, yeah?
So does the horizon area of these black holes grow during this process?
No, it actually remained constant. You will see soon. So despite all this, you know, dynamical setting, you can write the metric in coordinates which actually where the solution looks completely static. And so it's the same thing like if you have accelerated charge in special relativity. So you know that if the charge is uniformly accelerated, it's a current, and so it produces the magnetic field. It radiates because there is acceleration and so on. But if you actually transform to a system which, when you are co-moving with the charge, everything is static. So you only see sort of modified Coulomb law.
Yeah, but for black holes, if you want to accelerate, you will need to shoot, energy or momentum towards the horizon, right?
Nevertheless, the solution is static. I agree, but nevertheless, the solution is static. Okay, so this is very, very a solution, right? So why people care? And people actually care a lot. It's an interesting solution, as I said, goes back to 1917. And so one of the reasons is actually it provides a test spacetime for studying the gravitational radiation. Okay, so it's an exact radiative spacetime, which is boost symmetric. And And so people study various radiation patterns, and this was like really served to understand what radiation actually means in general relativity. But going back to people like Chandra Ashtekar and so on, but more recently, you know, in various asymptotics, like so people study the symmetric in ADS or DS and whatever, and then they ask, you know, what does it mean that the radiation is present? What does it mean, you know, what are the radiation patterns? So it's actually a very, very useful solution to study these properties. Another thing is that you can use this metric to actually to percreate black holes. So for example, I put an electric field, and if the electric field is sufficiently strong, you percreate two black holes, and then they move away from each other, and this is described by the charge symmetry. Or people study this in De Sitter space, where sort of the pull away is called by the De Sitter expansion. Okay, so I refer you to Ross. Simon Ross in 2003 for a review of these things. And you know, many people like Hawking study these things. Very interestingly, the symmetric actually was used to construct the most beautiful solution in five dimensions of five-dimensional vacuum gravity, and that is the black ring. So what Emparan and Real did is that basically they took the Dilatonic symmetric in four dimensions and they Vick rotated it. In some very weird way, and then they lifted it up to five dimensions, and that's how they got the black ring solution. So it's actually, you know, so it's really, really beautiful work. And so also, this is also the reason why actually people don't have these black rings, the exact solutions for black rings in higher dimensions, is because the symmetric is only known in four dimensions. So people were trying to construct symmetric in higher dimensions, but they failed so far. And that's why we don't actually have exact solution for black rings in more than five dimensions. Okay, so then symmetric was used for ADS-CFT correspondence, and then you know it describes black funnels and black droplets and stuff like that. It also provides means how we can actually split the cosmic string. So if I really have like an infinite cosmic string, then you cannot just cut it in the middle, and there will be a solution where you have cosmic string moving like this and cosmic string moving like that. That solution doesn't exist. But what you can do is that you can actually attach to that cosmic string the two black holes, and that solution does exist. And you can study this process of cutting the string and creating the black holes. The alternative is that you cut the string and you produce a gravitational wave, spherical gravitational wave. So then you have sort of moving the ends of the string, and as the ends of the string move away from each other, you have a spherical gravitational wave in between them. Anyway, so it's actually used for quite a few things. So as I said, our thing will be to understand the thermodynamics. So now, regarding the setup, so I told you we have a strut in between the two black holes, but alternatively, we can actually replace the strut with these semi-infinite cosmic strings. So you know, physically it's a different configuration, but mathematically you can decide, do I want the conical deficit to be here, or do I want the conical access to be there? Okay, so cosmic string has positive tension, strut has negative tension. So some people believe that negative tension is not physical, so they don't like this setting, and that's why I will mostly consider the strings on the other side. Okay, so then you can also have regular symmetrics where the cosmic strings are not, or the conical deficits are not present at all. And how you can do that is due to Ernst in 1976. It's basically you cause the acceleration by something else, and that something else could be, for example, the electric field or magnetic field. So if I place a charged black hole in a external electric field, it will accelerate towards the electric field, and there is no conical singularity whatsoever. Everything is regular, right? So these are quite nice solutions here. And as I said, you can put the symmetrics into various asymptotics, and so people now study De Sitter, anti-De Sitter symmetrics, and you can include scalar fields, and you can include higher forms, and so on. And so what is not known is the generalization of these metrics to higher dimensions. They are only known in four dimensions, and the thermodynamics is actually a question. Questions so far? So I want to study thermodynamics. I just want to concentrate on the second thing. I will not try to generalize the symmetric into higher dimensions. And to study thermodynamics, I'll consider the simplest possible setups from the thermodynamic point of view. And that is actually surprisingly not asymptotically flat symmetric, but it's actually ADS symmetric. So you are now in ADS naturally. And moreover, there is what I will call and explain small acceleration. So anyway, so here's the solution. So there is 1 over omega squared, and there is a big bracket here. And if you look inside the big bracket, then this looks like spherically symmetric solution. The metric function f, if you look at it, what it is. Okay, so there's this strange prime factor here, but it's like 1 minus 2m over r plus r squared over l squared, which is just a Schwarzschild ADS thing, or Schwarzschild if you kill this term. And so the effect of the acceleration, so there's this acceleration parameter a, which is basically like the magnitude of the acceleration, is simply modifying the function by multiplying this thing here. Okay, so this is the metric function. Then you have the other metric function h, which would be 1 if you had Schwarzschild. But if you have non-trivial acceleration of the black hole, then there is this plus 2ma cosine t. Okay, so that's what's inside, and it looks very much like a static spherical symmetric spacetime. So what makes it really interesting is this conformal prefactor 1 over omega squared. And so it's simply given by 1 plus ar cosine theta. So this is without charges, without rotation, anything. It's just accelerated black hole. And this is written in sort of like Boyle-Lingvis this coordinate or Schwarzschild coordinates. Okay? So now the conformal factor omega is, as I said, the thing which makes things interesting. And basically when omega vanishes, we have 1 over infinity standing in front of the bracket, and that defines an infinity. That's the true infinity. It's a conformal infinity. In our ADS case, it will be mostly the standard time-like conformal infinity, unless actually strange things start happening. Okay, so that is our infinity when omega is equal to 0. All right, so now I said you can consider two regimes of this metric. And they are basically related to the fact that if you look at the metric function here, well, you have r squared here, and then you have 1 over r, so this is a cubic. So it can have up to 3 zeros. If it has 1 zero, you call that a slow accelerating black hole. If it has 3, you call it a fast accelerating black hole. So the slow acceleration, accelerating case happens when the magnitude of the acceleration is sort of smaller than 1 over L, where L is the ADS radius. Okay? And so what is really beautiful about this is that there are no acceleration horizons, and there are no two black holes. So the situation which I described, and this only exists in ADS. So, and it's really, really beautiful, so that's why we decide to study it. So what I described before is two black holes which come from infinity and go back to infinity. So you have two black holes in the space-time, and you have a Rindler horizon in between them. However, in this case, everything is very, very static and very, very different. What you have is one black hole in the space-time, sort of hovering above, you know, the center of the ADS. And of course, because there's a gravitational pull from ADS, so everything tries to go to the center. So now I have to balance that with some repulsion, and that's caused by the string. There's basically one black hole hovering above the center of the ADS, just hanging on a string. And that string goes all the way. Okay, so that is the setup which we describe here. So now this picture is taken from this paper is just to impress you that people understand the causal structure of these spacetimes. So here's your conformal infinity, and here's the black hole horizon, and the typical observer lives between the infinity and the horizon. Okay? And so what it basically, so these coordinates are different from what I used. This is basically the theta coordinate, comes from 0 to pi. And this is the radial coordinate, goes from R0, which is the black hole horizon, all the way to infinity. So this is the part of the space where you live. This is your conformal infinity of the space-time, and there's a horizon here. This is how it looks like. So the fact that you can have this
Are there going to be any supersymmetric solutions?
I think there are, yeah.
There are.
I'm sure there are, yeah. So the fact that you can have this slow acceleration case was actually first noticed here in 2002. So now, if you break this condition, A is smaller than 1 over L, then your structure of the space-time becomes suddenly much more complicated and much more ugly. Okay? So again, you have coordinates, the theta coordinate, which goes from 0 to pi. And then it, depending on which direction you are looking, to which theta I am looking, I see different things. So for example, if I'm looking in this range of thetas, I first have a black hole horizon. And then I have the Rindler horizon. But I also have a cosmological horizon. And then finally, I have a conformal infinity. OK? So now this conformal infinity is time-like. And the picture looks like precisely in this picture here. So you have, so here, the black hole is sort of inverted. You have the black hole region here. And then the region 2 is the normal space-time, where the observer lives. And then you have the acceleration horizon. And then you have the cosmological horizon. And then you have the conformal infinity. So this is the conformal diagram for an observer looking at this direction.
Why are you accounting for what happens beyond the inner horizon?
Of course, yeah, this is just a, you know, it's just the completion of the space-time, right? Yeah, it's like, yeah. In the same way as you would do it for Reisner and Ostrom.
Right, thing, but, yeah. But that's just wishful thinking.
Yeah, of course, of course. No, this is just, I'm taking an eternal black hole or whatever. And yeah, exactly. So now if I look at the different data, so then suddenly the cosmological horizon here disappears. And then I have only black hole horizon, I have the acceleration horizon, and then I have infinity. But of course, as I travel on the infinity, I encounter this extra horizon. So if the infinity is time-like here, it will be space-like here, and it will be time-like again here. So it actually changes the structure of the infinity. Okay, so I don't have the corresponding conformal diagram, but it will be very different. And then finally, if you are looking at another theta, then you just see the black hole horizon, and there is no acceleration horizon, and you see just directly directly the conformal infinity. So in any case, the space-time is very, very complicated. So once the acceleration is large, you have lots of complications for thermodynamics. You have many horizons. Each horizon can be at a different temperature. So you don't have thermodynamic equilibrium. Nobody knows how to do thermodynamics for De Sitter black holes. And this is even worse, right? So you have instead of De Sitter horizon, you have sort of acceleration horizon. It's sort of similar, but anyway. So I will completely disregard the large acceleration case and concentrate on the simple, slow accelerating case where I simply have a black hole and then infinity. And this is my region where I study things. OK? So we focus on slow acceleration. In that case, we have only one black hole and a single black hole horizon. And so it may be possible to actually write down the thermodynamics. OK, so now warning. OK, it looks very plausible. But the problem is we still have the cosmic string present in the space-time. OK, so how does that influence thermodynamics? Right? So can it actually do something with the thermodynamics? Can it prevent me from studying thermodynamics? And another thing is, can I actually make the string dynamical? Can I vary its tension? That will be another thing. OK, and there's even more important objection is that, well, we know that the black hole is accelerating. Because it's accelerating, it's uniformly accelerating, but nevertheless, there'll be a radiation. And that's what people actually show, that there is a corresponding radiative pattern at infinity. So there must be some kind of radiation going to infinity. Nevertheless, as we've seen, the metric is static. So we have radiation in the static coordinates. And I know that the question is, can I still formulate thermodynamics despite the fact that some energy is going all the way to infinity? Or actually, does it? Is it going all the way to infinity and then comes back so that there is some balance between retarded and advanced potentials or something like that? I think people still don't understand what's really happening here. Nevertheless, despite these two warnings, I'll show you that we can formulate thermodynamics, which sort of looks reasonable.
Is the tension in the string proportional to the acceleration or something?
Yeah, I'll show you in a minute. Yeah, very good. So this is just to show you the parameter space. So basically, when we discuss that metric, which I showed you before, we have to make sure that it has physical signature and that the angle theta goes really from 0 to pi. That gives you that everything what is blue here is forbidden. Then you must have a black hole in the bulk, no naked singularity, of course, in this non-rotating and non-charged case, this is automatically satisfied, but it will be an additional condition if you have rotation and charge. And you also have to make sure, or I want to make sure, that I'm in the slow acceleration regime where actually I don't have the extra horizons and stuff like that. So the slow acceleration regime is violated in the red part of the diagram. And so the admissible parameter space for our thermodynamics is simply M is smaller, MA is smaller than this thing, and A is smaller than that thing. And so basically the AL equal to 1, which I said that's when the slow acceleration goes to large acceleration. Okay, so now to your question. So we have this conical deficit or cosmic string. And of course, how strong the cosmic string is and how strong the acceleration is determined by the behavior of one of these metric functions. And so basically you can look at this metric function at the pole, and you can look at the north pole, which is theta plus equal to 0, or the south pole, theta minus pi. And then you can consider surfaces of constant T and R and introduce basically like a distance to the poles. So this is my new coordinate theta curl. And then you find that your metric actually looks like this. So there's some, again, conformal prefactor here. But what you have here simply looks like pole coordinates around this pole. The only difference is that now you would have theta squared d phi square. But instead of d phi square, you have this thing here. So what it means is that if I consider phi from 0 to 2 pi, which I actually did in the previous paragraph, then actually this thing will change the period of the whole thing. So there will be a conical deficit or whatever. So we consider phi to have periodicity 2 pi. But then obviously, because of this factor here, I will have conical deficits, delta plus minus, which are given precisely by this factor, which changes the periodicity from 2 pi. And then if you want, you can replace this conical deficit by a cosmic string, and the corresponding tension will be related to these conical deficits. So now you see that really the acceleration is somehow related to the tension of the string, but it's not as straightforward as one might think.
So
yes?
If I look at, Riemann square, right? So presumably once I approach the poles, that will convert. I guess I'm asking, inside the slow acceleration regime, is the geometry weakly curved, or there will always be some parts?
As far as I know, the only singularity is inside the black hole. So everything is regular, but you have the conical deficit. That's the only singularity. It's a conical singularity. There is no curvature singularity.
Right. Well, it's a delta function curvature singularity. Right on.
Yeah. All right, so now the standard choice is to say, well, it's only one string actually pulling the thing, not two. So this, like, this situation describes, I have one string here, black hole, another string here. They can have different tensions, and so one is winning, so that's why it's pulling the black hole on that side. However, typically people consider to kill one of the strings, so they decide, I want to, let's say, make the North Pole regular, and so there's no string on the North Pole. And then you can achieve that by setting k to some value. So if you look at the formulas, so I want to basically set mu plus equal to 0. So I want to set this thing here with the plus sign equal to 0. And that tells you that k has to be 1 plus 2m. Okay, then I have 1 minus 1 and 0. Okay, so choosing k in this way, 1 plus 2ma, I just achieved that the tension of one string is 0. So there's no one string on one side, and there is a string on the other side.
So can you comment in which sense people are considering the string as a dynamic log?
I'll show you some pictures. I'll show you some pictures. And yeah, it probably doesn't answer your question. But anyway, so just the meaning of the coordinates. So I use these Schwarzschild-like coordinates. So what they really mean, so on the left, what you have is just the accelerating Rindler space. There's this particle sitting and accelerating uniformly. So of course, you are sitting on that test particle, and you measure the radius around that test particle. Okay, but then looking at various directions, so this is theta equal to 0 direction, and this is theta equal to pi, and you have different thetas. So actually, if you want to know where your conformal infinity is, it's actually beyond r equal to infinity. So on one side, you go to a finite value of r. On the other side, you go to r equal to infinity to some negative r's. OK, so that's simply the coordinate. So but anyway, in the vicinity of the black hole, r is the the right coordinate. Okay? So now this is just a test particle on the left. On the right, I just replaced the test particle with the black hole, and then of course everything loses really its meaning. But nevertheless, so what really happens is that now I have the black hole where the test particle was, and now I have the cosmic string which goes all the way to infinity. And because the cosmic string goes all the way to infinity, it cuts even the conical deficit on the boundary. So you still see that cosmic string on the boundary, and that would be a problem. But anyway, so we place the cosmic string on the south pole, and everything is regular on the north pole. So this is the picture to have in mind when we study these accelerated black holes. However, I will not really impose this, and I will say, well, actually, we will be able to vary the tensions of the strings on both sides. So there's a good reason why not to. So tension of a cosmic strings are topological defects. It looks very weird to change the tension, right? So I have seven infinite cosmic string, and now in some continuous thermodynamic process, I want to change the tension of the cosmic string. Or of course, I have to change it everywhere. I have to change it from the black hole all the way to infinity instantaneously. So that looks very strange. Moreover, you know, this should be quantized and blah, blah, blah. So in the first paper, we had good ideas, but as I said, it was completely wrong. We said, well, let's fix the cosmic string tensions. In the other paper, we said, well, maybe we can actually vary these cosmic string tensions. And that was because of Rob Myers told us, well, why don't you vary them? It should be really useful to vary them. And then he provided an example, which I'll show you in a minute. How you can actually vary cosmic strings and cosmic string tension. All right, so this is the setup. Now let's study the thermodynamics. So how we can change the tension of the, how we can do it. And so the simplest example which Roos had in mind from 95 or so, so first of all, she showed that actually you can join smoothly these cosmic strings to a black hole. So this is sort of like a counterexample to know her theorem. So you can actually so the black hole actually can support cosmic string here, and then everything sort of joins nicely and whatever. So that is an exact solution. Well, at least perturbatively, which actually describes the situation. So anyway, so now imagine a situation where I have a cosmic string traveling through our universe, and I have a black hole, and then at some point this cosmic string actually got, you know, captured by the black hole. So of course, now from the point of view of the black hole, before I had no conical deficits, and now I do have conical deficits. Okay, so then one can, in spherical symmetric case, one can do very simple mass and just say, well, once I capture the cosmic string, it will simply change the periodicity of my angle phi, and this is basically like Schwarzschild with this changed periodicity of phi, and corresponds to the cosmic string with the tension, as we discussed before, and now it's just 1 over k. So basically, k describes the strength of the overall defect running through the black hole. Okay, so just take the space-time and study its thermodynamics, and you just find, by doing simple things, you just find that the mass of the space-time now gets changed by the presence of the cosmic string, and the temperature is given by the standard formula, and the entropy is simply area over 4. And then what we really did in that paper is that we really argued that this is a good description of a capture of a cosmic string by the black hole. So, and it is simply described by the Sparrow relation and the first law, where you add to this thing here an extra term, where you have delta mu, which represents capturing the string, times the corresponding conjugate quantity. The corresponding conjugate quantity is something like one half r plus, and you can sort of say, well, this is precisely the piece of the string which was captured by the black hole, and it's now below the horizon. And so there's a corresponding energy gain, which is lambda times delta. Okay, so this is what we argued, and it provides a reasonable description of a capture of the string. So I'll refer you to more details. This is like very heuristic argument, but yes?
So So the cosmic string scans over the whole space, right? So,
yeah.
And it's, strictly speaking, an infinitely massive object, right? So
I agree.
When you talk about delta,
it's like a black hole.
Yeah. It's a delta view at the horizon, at the okay, or it's
the, yeah, it's on the horizon, yeah.
So then you don't have a constant tension. Then I don't understand what you're doing. How can I think operationally?
So I'm trying to formulate a first law for the black hole itself. So in one case, I don't really have, so the cosmic string is very, very far away, so the black hole doesn't know really about it. And so I argue that that has mu equal to zero. And then after the capture, I say, well, it's actually some non-trivial tension, non-trivial string going through the black hole.
So you basically write down a phenomenological relation for the mass of the black hole.
Yeah.
Whatever happens to it in the presence of the fixed tension,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
String, depending on how much the black hole aids the string.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is a very heuristic argument. Yeah. So anyway, so this is one example how you could sort of think about changing the tension of the string. Another example is actually due to Rob. And this is a really beautiful and crazy example, right? So you imagine that you have already an accelerated black hole where you have the cosmic string on one side, and then you throw in another accelerated black hole with this another attached string, right? So now I'm changing the mass of the black hole because I'm throwing in a black hole, but I'm also changing the tension of the string. And then I throw another black hole with another cosmic string, and so on. So this is actually, and Rob was saying, well, this is certainly possible, and so we should be able to describe thermodynamics of these things. So in order to describe them, I'm just simply seeking a first law, which would look like the standard first law, delta m equals to TdS, but now I allow these terms to be present. So I can change the tension of the string on the north pole, I can change the tension of the string on the south pole, and then whatever the work terms I have later on. Okay, so this is the first law which we are seeking. Of course, if I don't allow the changing the tensions of the strings, these terms will disappear and I'll have the standard first. What is, however, beautiful about this one here is that I have that many parameters in my description of the spacetime, and I simply allow to vary all of them, and that gives me a certain number of terms, and so that precisely corresponds to the number of terms I have on the right side here. Okay, so I will call that it's like a full homogeneity first law, which simply means that I am allowed to vary the mass, which corresponds to, let's say, delta S, but I'm also allowed to vary the tension, let's say, K, and I'm allowed to vary the other tension, let's say capital A, and then the other thing. So this is really the first law which takes into account variations of all the objects.
Would you defend this if I actually resolved the singularities? Because, well, I don't know if it's obvious or not, so just briefly. So you might say, okay, wait a minute. Certainly in any case where these things go out to an infinity, that would require an infinite amount of energy to actually change, which the space-time would know about if I can resolve and take the underground back direction and all that. It's also going to make my asymptotics time-dependent, which means I can't at least use the usual nine things. I'm going to have to be more clever.
Okay. So what is the question?
So the question is, I can understand how you could write down those things as long as I really treat these as conical singularities, but as soon as I try to resolve it, it looks to me like there are severe problems. Do you have anything to say?
I have nothing to say. Thanks. All right. So now, the question is, let's try to find this first law for our black holes. And the first task is actually to calculate the mass. And that's actually quite complicated in ADS spacetime. So one might think I can use the Komar integration. Of course, it's known that it doesn't work. And then what people try to do is that they try to subtract the background, and so subtract the Killing vector of a spacetime where the mass parameter is equal to zero. That works for Schwarzschild, but it doesn't work for more general cases. However, there is a beautiful method which is called conformal method due to Ashtekar and Das in 2000. And that basically depends on the conformal completion of the metric. So this is my original metric. Now I formulate a new metric, which is given by some conformal prefactor, which vanishes on the boundary. And then the prescription is, let's calculate the corresponding while for this conformally completed metric, where this omega is properly chosen. And let n is just a normal to the boundary. And let's use the Killing vector at infinity, which and I want to calculate the corresponding charge, and it's given over here. So if I take dt, Killing vector psi, this should give me mass. If I take d phi, it should give me angular momentum, and so on. So that's one method which works very well for calculating ADS spacetimes. Another one is the Euclidean action calculation. And of course, I have to add the ADS countertimes. So you have the standard Einstein-Hilbert action with the cosmological term. You have the Gibbons-Hawking term here. But still, if you calculate the value of the sorry?
York?
Yeah.
This is a dispute. Just say fine and keep going.
It should be the York term.
OK, I believe you. So you're saying Getty didn't do it, or?
Get on top of York is.
I see, OK. OK, sorry. York term, and then the value of this action is still can be infinite, and so you have to add some counter terms. And in four dimensions, they are simply given by these things here, where on the boundary it is the Ricci scalar and there is Laura. Okay, so if I calculate this, and I believe that this really has any meaning, the value of this action has any meaning, then we should associate it with the free energy. And free energy, of course, is given by m minus ts. If I know what T and S are, I can calculate M. Okay, so that's the second method. Third method does precisely this thing here, but goes a little bit further and says, well, okay, so I have this action here. Why don't I vary this action with respect to the boundary metric? And that leads to the holographic stress tensor. And this is the prescription. So that's the variation of the thing with respect to the boundary metric. And I get some energy momentum tensor. I better calculate it in some nice coordinates which behave nicely close to the boundary. And so these are called Fermat-Graham coordinates. And basically, they guarantee that rho goes nicely to the infinity. So rho, I hope this is rho infinity, is the ADS boundary. And this holographic stress tensor lives on the boundary. And it's related to the expectation of the energy momentum tensor by this thing here. And so once I calculate this guy, I can calculate the mass by simply integrating the energy density.
So that. How do you know the dictionary is still working?
Sorry?
How do you know the dictionary is still working?
What do you mean? You don't know.
How do you know the dictionary is working in the first place?
That's really good. That's no-no.
Okay.
Everybody said crazy.
All right, so we have these three methods. And the question is, which one gives you the correct mass? And the answer is that in general, none of them. And so they typically, if you have some weird spacetimes, especially if the ADS asymptotics is not approached sufficiently quickly, for example, as in the case of the scalar fields, then actually they give completely different results. And the question is which one is the right one. However, provided some reasonable conditions, they should give you the same. They should give you the same. Question is not, the question is that we don't know whether the symmetric action satisfies these conditions or not. So now how do you recognize the correct mass? The correct mass is the thermodynamic mass. In other words, it's the mass which satisfies the first law. That's my definition of correct mass. And so anything which out of these three methods which gives me the correct mass, the thermodynamic mass, I will like. Okay? So problem with all three methods is that you need to identify the correct Killing vector. So in the conformal method, the Killing vector enters the formula. In the action thing, it enters the normalization of beta and stuff like that. So I really need to identify the correct timeline Killing vector, which is responsible for my energy in the space-time. And this is often actually very difficult. So now, this is precisely why the first two papers are wrong. We misidentified the Killing vector, which is responsible for the energy in the space-time. We also screwed up the calculation. But anyway, so that's the main physical reason why.
Sure. Can I ask?
Yeah.
So there is an ADS plot. So is there a sum of the same? So you are presenting something that is happening in the block as a state, right?
Okay.
Of some system under acceleration, right? Whatever. Is there some way I can think about what you are doing with the CFT? Suppose I wouldn't have ADS CFT correspondent. I just have a conformal field theory. What do I need to do with that conformal field theory to describe it as a thermal state under some acceleration. What
I'll show you what the holographic stress tensor looks like.
No, I don't want holography. I'm just saying you have a CFT. I know how to make a thermal state in the CFT, but now you are putting additional property of that something, which is an acceleration. So I'm asking you, what's the acceleration in the bulk? How would that, that's kind of going along with the Louis question.
I think what it corresponds to is that you have sort of like a vertex, you have like a source, which sort of, and then you have flow from that source.
But then I don't know, then I'm not in equilibrium, right? I mean,
that's right.
So why would I even worry about trying?
You sort of are, because it's the uniform acceleration. So uniform accelerations are very strange. So they are sort of okay. Although they radiate and stuff like that, but I think as long as you are like uniformly accelerating, it should be fine. I don't know.
Okay, so the answer is you don't know.
The answer is I don't know.
How I can think about some? I have a particular spectrum of states in my CFT, and somehow I'm accelerating. What am I doing?
I don't know. Okay. Maybe people do know, but I don't know.
Maybe if you can say something about the battery metric you're talking about is usually ABS.
The boundary, I'll show you. It's not really.
I'm trying to come to something which he's going to say in a minute.
Any intuition or anything you can gain by considering the ADS CFT or the holography studies that people have tried to on a window horizon? So that's the observer. So this, I'm changing the acceleration now. I'm putting the acceleration on the ball, and then my observer is not accelerated. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can gain insight?
It's a good. I haven't. All right. So as I said, so the most important thing is to identify the Killing vector. So let's say that the T is actually not the right Killing vector, and I have to multiply it by alpha to get the right time coordinate at infinity. The question is how to determine this alpha. And in this first case, actually quite simple, because first of all, you can just plug in the mass parameter equal to zero for the metric. And then you can do an explicit coordinate transformation to the ADS space, which looks like this. I'm imposing that whatever stands in front of d tau square is just this thing here. And this is an accompanied coordinate transformation. And then you actually find that the relation between the true time and the time in the metric is through this alpha here. And so that's what was missing in the first paper, basically. So there's another two methods how you can do it. So you can look at the boundary metric. It should be ADS, even this M not equal to zero, but actually it's not. And then there's a third method, which I asked Rob about, and he actually was very puzzled. So interestingly, if you calculate the variation of the action, then on the boundary, of course, I have tau AB delta gamma AB. So now I can vary my boundary metric with respect to the parameters, if there are any. Okay, and so then I just take it as a partial derivative of gamma AB with respect to something, mass, delta M, and then whatever. And you add these things, and you calculate this quantity here. And of course, what you require is that this is equal to zero. Interestingly, this fixes alpha as well. So it's an interesting method, which we still don't understand, because it sort of seems like coordinate dependent method, and it's very strange, but people actually have been using this. So anyway, so once you identified the right Killing vector, you can calculate the mass. All three methods give the same mass, which again, we didn't know in the first paper, so that's actually good. And then you can calculate, for example, from the action, you can calculate the entropy. You take just the temperature, the BF prime over 4 pi, and the alpha just comes from the normalization of the Killing vector. And everything is now consistent. So all three methods give the same thing, and give the same thermodynamic quantities. And of course, you calculated them independently, but then you can just check the first law and it works. Okay, so the thermodynamics works, and you have these delta mu terms if you want there. But if you don't want them, you just set them equal to zero, and you sort of isolate the black hole. So you set delta mu plus equal to zero, delta mu mass minus equal to zero. And if you look at that, they only depend on MA and K. And if you set both of them equal to zero, it tells you that MA has to be constant and K has to be constant. So delta F, so now of course MA is just a force, right? So you are saying that there's a there's a constant force on the black hole, and in other words, more massive objects accelerate also. So this is like a nice meaning when you want to isolate the black hole and fix the tensions of the string. And then you have the standard principle. All right, so then you can study the free energy of these things, and it looks like partial ADS free energy, except that these black holes are actually fast accelerating. So they are not really described by our thermodynamics, and we have to cut them. Also, for the Schwarzschild ADS, you would have a Hawking-Page transition here from radiation to a black hole. But this is not really the case, because the diagram is plotted for fixed string tension. And of course, you don't have radiation with fixed string tension. So this only looks like superficially like Hawking-Page transition, but we don't really know what's happening is the thing. So now here's for those who waited to see some holography. So just notice that the boundary metric actually, which is written here, still depends on the mass parameter m, which people tell me it's strange, that it shouldn't. But anyway, so it depends on some parameters. It depends on m, depends on a, depends on l as it should. But anyway, so these two parameters actually do appear in the boundary metric. Then you find the energy momentum tensor written in these coordinates. It's simply written like this, which looks like an anisotropic perfect fluid. So I have different pressure here and different pressure there. However, this is not, I was told, how people like to decompose these things. And then if you follow the decomposition rules for the holographic fluids, you actually find this decomposition where u is the velocity of the observer who is flowing in the x direction as well. So u is something times d tau plus something times dx. This is a very complicated motion on the boundary, flowing from north pole to south pole. So this will be the perfect fluid form. But there's another term which actually appears there. There's a universal coefficient psi standing in front of it. And there's a tensor theta AB, which is constructed out of the Cauchon tensor. So actually, what it means is that your fluid is not perfect fluid on the boundary, and there's some strange things here. But I'm not a person through holography, so I don't really know what this means and whether it's really interesting or not. Yeah?
So I'm just looking at it. So that's supposed to be a background metric to which my field theory leads.
That's right. Yeah.
And it depends on some things that is part of the thermal ensemble.
So notice that you don't even for non-trivial acceleration you don't have round sphere. You have something.
I don't care about that. I care that you vary something.
But is it asymptotically local ADS? That is all this, are all these parameters just come down to a conical deficit, or is it more than that?
I think local A should be ADS. Yeah, but Bob is at an install.
What's the curvature like in this metric? Anything else than the conical similarity of the cosmic string, or this?
I don't think there is. I think it's fine, except that, yeah.
But does it have a non-trivial Riemann tensor?
It has non-trivial
Riemann tensor.
I don't remember, but I can check. All right. So now I'm running out of time. So this is how actually the thermodynamics looks like for just accelerating black holes. So now you could consider also adding charge and spin. And so just to flash some results that we have them. So this is the metric, much more complicated. But if you look at, again, what's inside the bracket, apart from the conformal factor, it's basically Kerr ADS. Okay? And then so there are some acceleration modifications, but it's just Kerr ADS with charge or whatever. Okay? So now, oh, very good. I just wanted to briefly discuss this thing here. Question for you. Do you know what is the meaning of these conjugate quantities? Namely, what B here and omega and phi here are as the conjugate quantities? And the answer is they are thermodynamic conjugate quantities. So what I mean by this is that actually, these things, they really make sense only for thermodynamics. So people try to define these things by some geometrical arguments for black holes or whatever. But really, what omega should be considered is that it's dm over dj at constant p, s, and q. Okay, so it's really something which is thermodynamically defined. So now, why I'm talking about this? Yeah?
Why? I mean, I can write a differential of any function and then write something that is like that and that has nothing to do yet with
Just
because you named them in a particular way doesn't mean that.
That's right. No. I'm just trying to make a point that, you know, people believe that these things actually, for example, for black holes, they can be calculated from something. Okay, the answer is maybe not. Okay, so here is an example. So take electrostatic potential, you take a Killing vector generating a horizon, you take the electric field, you take the product, and you calculate it on the horizon, and you call it electrostatic potential on the horizon. And so this is what people mostly write here for the first law. However, that's completely not true, because of course, first of all, this is not even gauge invariant. If I change my gauge, I can tune this to any value here.
And that's why that's not the actual thing that people are being slightly casual in that. If you actually derive it, it's the actual difference.
Okay. So very good. So now what I'm trying to argue is that, yeah, it's the difference between the infinity and the horizon. But the problem is that, for example, for the symmetric, the potential at infinity is actually theta dependent. So you cannot really, it doesn't make any sense to consider this quantity here. And so it took us a long time to actually understand that what we have to use to get sensible thermodynamics is the Hawking-Ross prescription from 95, where they give this beautiful formula here, which they use for something else. They used it for going from the action from the grand canonical ensemble to the canonical ensemble. But anyway, so this formula actually can be used to calculate phi, which is theta independent, and it's by definition thermodynamic. Okay? So another example would be, let's do the angular velocity, right? So typically people say, well, angular velocity is simply an angular velocity of the zero angular momentum observer defined on the horizon. Okay, so I take zero angular momentum observer L equals to zero, and this is my Killing vector d phi. I contract it with the four velocity. This is u phi, and given by this, and then I call angular velocity d phi over dt, which is given by this formula, which you can find in any textbook. Minus gt phi over g phi phi, I evaluated on the horizon, and that's what should enter the first law. Well, people did that. Oh no, I just killed that. Oh no, sorry for that. There you go. All right, so now these people actually did that. They did it for KRADS, standard Boyle linguist coordinates. They calculated omega, as I just told you. They calculated the mass just in these coordinates as it looked. They checked that the free energy gives you these things, but they haven't checked the first law. And the first law is not satisfied with these quantities. So what is the reason? The problem is that actually the space-time rotates at infinity. So the standard Boyle linguist coordinates for KRADS are actually bad coordinates. There's a rotation omega infinity at infinity, and so what they suggested is that in the similar way as we are taking phi to be phi horizon minus phi infinity, we should be taking the difference between the angular velocities of the horizon at infinity. And so the best way is actually to do transform to a non-rotating frame. Now this phi does not rotate, and then you actually find that the mass also changes and omega changes. Okay, so that gives you a prescription for how to calculate omega. So the proposal is, again, what should enter is something like omega h minus omega infinity. Cannot be used for the symmetric. Omega infinity depends on theta. Okay, so what do you do then? So people typically take omega for the mass parameter equal to zero. That works for most of the cases, not for the symmetric. Okay, so there is no prescription how to actually do this. So it would be really nice to have something like Hawking-Ross-like prescription for calculating omega, but I don't know it. So if you can help me to find it, it would be great.
Sudarsky-Wald.
Sorry?
I
don't think it gives you omega. No.
Well, the prescription should let you figure it out.
Okay, so I'm out of time. So this is the thermodynamics of the symmetric, of the rotating one. It looks horrible, but it must be right. Okay, so of course the question is, as I told you now, the omega infinity is questionable. So what we did, and we are cheating a lot, we just took omega infinity depends on theta. So we took the theta which we like. We took theta on the North Pole. So we took cosine theta equal to 1. This is the omega infinity you get. But is this omega the thermodynamic force? So is it right? Is there another choice of omega infinity? Will it still work? It's a question. Okay? So now just to tell you, if you don't have charge, thermodynamics is simple. The rotating case is really, really simple if you don't have charge. You don't have to do this cosine theta equal to 1. However, if you have charge, the charge actually causes problems. So it's the first time in my career where I actually find that the charge case thermodynamics is much more complicated than the rotating one. Okay, because the rotating one is sort of straightforward and you use the standard methods, but the charge one is not. One of the reasons is that you have non-trivial electric field at infinity, and there is a voltage which is angular dependent. Another thing is that we are fixing this normalization of the Killing vector. In the first case, it can be done by straightforward coordinate transformation method. In the second case, you have charge. So you can't do it, and the method one does not work. But this thing seems to work. But we still don't understand why this really works. Okay, so let me conclude here. By the way, all I discussed so far is just the slowly accelerating ADS black holes. So now the question is, it would be really nice to find what happens in the asymptotically flat case. And people tried that. So there's a paper by Jenny Trashen from 2006. And then what she basically argues is that if you have asymptotically flat metric which has two black holes, these two black holes actually behave like a dipole. Okay, so she says there is no monopole mass at infinity, there is a dipole mass, which is associated with these two black holes. And then she sort of tries to formulate thermodynamics based on that. I'm not convinced it's correct. And then there's Astorino's paper. He is using Walt's formalism. It gives a horrible mess. I'll briefly describe what he does, but anyway. And then there's our paper 4, where we have much, much simpler thing, but it still may not be correct. So then there is an also regular case where you, for example, have symmetric in the electric field. And that's by Astorino. And again, I don't think it's totally correct. So what Astorino is doing is using this formalism here to construct asymptotic charges. But then what he is doing is that the formalism just gives you what J is, what S is, and what Q is. But then he's saying, well, there's this omega infinity. Let's call it just omega integration and phi infinity, which is phi integration. And let's account for a proper normalization of the Killing vector by adding alpha. So now he's imposing the first law to hold. And this simply fixes what alpha is, what omega integration is, and what phi integration is. It's just simply using thermodynamics to fix all these quantities. But this is not what we have done. We have calculated the quantities and then checked the first law, which is the right thing to do. He's just enforcing this thing here, and there's no independent check of what you need to do. Okay? So I think the problem is that he fixed thermodynamic quantities. He also has another problem that he actually sort of varies the tensions, but doesn't have the extra terms here. So it actually looks strange. And finally, it's very, very complicated thermodynamics. All right, so summary. So I hope I convince you that symmetric is actually quite cool. So it's one of the oldest and most unusual solutions of general relativity. But it has been used for many applications, actually, in theoretical gravitational physics. And it has many, many interesting properties. So I showed you that we can actually formulate consistent thermodynamics. And that's basically by standard methods, by the action calculation, by conformal method calculation, or by the holography. And the entropy still gives A over 4, and everything works. And so we really calculate these things independently and then check the first law. So you have this extended first law where you allow these tangents to vary. If you don't want that, you can kill them. And that actually fixes some of the parameters. Okay. So now the future directions. So we still don't understand why this is possible at all, why the radiation doesn't spoil the thermodynamics, or why the presence of the cosmic spin doesn't spoil the thermodynamics. So that certainly should be somehow analyzed, although I don't know how to do it. It would be interesting to do from slowly accelerating ADS black holes to the asymptotically flat ones or to the regular ones. And so do we really need to consider dipole mass as Jenny is suggesting and so on. We should better understand the conjugate quantities, so it's a beautiful prescription by Hawking and Ross for the potential. It would be really nice to have similar prescription for angular velocity. If there are any volunteers, I'll be really happy to do it. And finally, I'm not a person through holography, but it will be really interesting to understand what's happening on the boundary. How can you have the space-time which depends on M and A and whatever? And this, of course, becomes much more complicated in the rotating and charge case. So it will be really interesting to analyze if this is really useful for holography at all or not. Okay, thank you so much. Questions?
Sorry, I'm an outsider, so I have a very naive question. So your spin is always aligned with the string? Or do you have to consider it not actually symmetric?
In this case, it is aligned. This is, yeah.
Because from naively, it seems like what you're doing is similar to taking a just ordinary black hole spacetime without quantum singularity, just cutting a slice, slice of it, and then identify the two sides of it. And then your old qualities, if you don't break active symmetry, all the qualities just get scaled with the same factor.
But you're right that actually the spin aligned with these things is quite important, because in the same way as you can have sort of static solutions without conical singularity in the case of charge, I have charge black hole here, charge black hole here. If they are extremal, there can be a static configuration without a conical singularity, because simply the gravitational attraction is balanced by the electromagnetic repulsion. Okay. So similarly, people actually considered what happens if you have two spinning objects, and so there's a spin-spin interaction. Right, and so it may be possible to place two black holes, two Kerr black holes, extremal two black holes, which actually are in static configuration, although probably unstable, because the repulsion is due to the spin-spin interaction. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's actually sort of related. But yeah, here it is aligned.
Also,
another
question too: do we understand, or does anyone understand the thermodynamic description of just space time because of cosmic strength? That's it.
Right. We thought it's trivial, but if we are correct, I don't know. so that's the thing which we are sort of doing with the, well, not really. We are putting the black hole there.
Yeah, my way of thinking as well. If we don't understand the single cosmic string by itself, why would we hope to have?
Because we are sort of subtracting whatever the string is doing, right? We are sort of like treating we are trying to find the thermodynamics of the black hole, sort of neglecting the string a little bit, right? So whatever the string is doing, we are sort of just trying to get rid of that and take it as a background or something like that. That's an intuitive answer.
Any more questions? You talk about this black hole like pulled by the string, but if you just consider, another scenario, I wonder if the exact solution is not that scenario. If you have a charged black hole and you put it in an electric field, plus electric field, and it's accelerating, as you said, is the exact solution? No?
Yeah, yeah. So is the end solution, end solution. It's an exact solution, but again, you have some external electric field or whatever. Everything is regular. So now, if you want to study thermodynamics, the big question is, and Marco is saying we don't have to, do we need to sort of put extra terms to the first law, which are related to this external field? Okay. So he's saying we don't have to. We can just, you know, take this fixed electric field and stuff like that. I'm not sure. Maybe he's right. But we want to look at that. So we haven't looked at these regular things. Wanted really to look at the cosmic strings first, because Roos is an expert in cosmic strings and is or her life to study cosmic strings. So that's why we look at the symmetric with cosmic strings. But it will be nice and interesting to look at the regular thing. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So if no more questions, let's say
yeah. Thanks.